Welcome. Nice to be here with you this afternoon on this beautiful Sabbath. Welcome to everybody on the webcast as well. It's a pleasure to spend the time. But I wanted to touch on a topic that I've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time on. And on the surface, it can be a conundrum. I want to talk to you about peace and having peace in your life, especially when you're in a situation where you feel like everything is just crushing you. You know, I normally don't tell a lot of stories. I'm going to start with one, a personal story that played into partially this discussion. I had the opportunity, if you call it that, to spend some time with my mother recently. As many of you know, she died died recently. And there was a experience. My wife and I were in the hospital room. My mother has been in the church for 60 years. And we were in the hospital room. It was late, just about time to leave. Everybody else had left. My brother and his family was there, and it was my wife and myself. And as we were standing there, it had been a hard day for my mother. I mean, her health had dropped off fairly rapidly. And the end was coming. She knew it. As we were talking, she told me several times, she's done. She's ready. But a strange thing happened. So as the night wore on and we were getting ready to leave, one of the things she did was she became a little anxious. So I'm standing there with my wife, and as it is time for us to leave, she said, "Please don't leave. I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be alone now." Her anxiety grew. At some point, as we were talking to her, Soledad, my wife, asked, "Judy, would you like to pray?" Now, I should have thought about that earlier. Thank you, Soledad, for thinking about that. My mother said yes. We took her hands and we prayed. We asked for comfort. We asked for God's Spirit to be stirred up, for His will to be done. When we finished praying, her anxiety left. She was able to sleep. We're in a different place. The next day, she was in a different place. That was pretty amazing to sit there and see that. But it made me think, if we could go to the first slide. It made me think about, what does it mean when we have peace in our life? And is peace actually a conundrum? Because if we take the time and we look at Oxford, Merriam-Webster, if we look at any of the dictionaries and we try to decipher what is peace, at least peace from a worldly perspective, we come to actually, it's kind of a difficult place, right? And so based on what the dictionaries would say, peace results when there's an absence of conflict, when a disturbance is removed, or a hostility is removed. So there was conflict, there was challenge, there was difficulty, and there is no more. It can mean freedom from war and violence, and we see that all over the world. It can mean that there's inner calm or tranquility, but that generally comes as a result of something being removed. Peace can also be referred to as psychological or emotional stillness, but again, that happens most often when difficulty, problems, struggle is removed. So how do we think about that definition then? How do we think about what that means to us? How do we think about what that means for peace? Because it's a negative definition. It means that peace exists in our life The peace that we find in the world is going to exist in our life when something is removed. Pain, struggle, difficulty, challenge. And I'm sure we've all experienced that type of peace. But it's also situational. It is dependent on what happens. And if we have peace, that peace can go away really quickly depending on the situation. It's subjective. Oftentimes, it's how we perceive things. And it's often internalized where we say, I feel peace. But that leaves us kind of in a very fragile place, doesn't it? Because it means with that kind of peace, it's conditional on nothing being wrong. And that doesn't happen very often in this life. And that's why it's so fragile. That's why wars break out so often. Things happen. Peace evaporates. But there is another type of peace. You can go to the next slide. As Christ's time on this earth was drawing to a close, he identified a different type of peace that he is going to leave with those whom he has a relationship with, to those who are called in. And he says in John 14:27, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. A completely different type of peace. So what I want to do today is I want to attempt to unpack that peace a little bit. Because that peace is different. We experience it differently. And then I want to spend time looking at the life of a woman who we may not be that familiar with, and see that come to life. Explore what it looks like, because at times it's easy intellectually to engage with these topics and say, I get it. But it's different to actually see it. So we'll take a little bit of time and we will see it. We can go to the next slide. Before we go there, though, I want to define peace a little bit. I'm going to go back to the Hebrew. So as we get in today, there's a couple of terms we're going to come, one we're fairly familiar with. Actually, we may be familiar with them all. There's a few terms we're going to come into contact with. This is going to be the first. So we're going to go back to the Old Testament, and we're going to define peace, because what we find is the type of peace we're talking about, we find it in the Greek, and we find it in the Hebrew, and we find consistency. So one of the terms we see most often for peace is that peace or order. We're going to focus on this idea of order. Order and alignment, because it's really important. One of the words we find most frequently identified is that of shalom. So when we look through the Bible Helps and we look through the dictionaries and the lexicons, what we find is shalom generally denotes completeness, well-being. It denotes order, rather than merely the absence of conflict. So when we think about shalom for a minute, shalom is not dependent on something not being there. It is dependent on order. It is dependent on wholeness. It is dependent on connectedness. So when we think about peace biblically, it is a result of an outcome that flows from being made right with God, from being brought into his presence and remaining faithfully aligned with his way of life and his order. So the idea that we see with shalom, and we see this in various usages, we see a connection between shalom or peace and connecting with God and living according to his order or living according to his way of life. It's a state. It's a state where he picks us up, he cleans us up, he brings us into his presence. And when we come into his presence, we loyally follow him faithfully and align to his order. And the result of that connection, the result of that engagement then is shalom, is peace. And we often find shalom identifying that order, that we have aligned to that, to his way of life. So shalom, as we think about what it means and what it doesn't mean, it doesn't, as we think about it, deny the fact, this peace that we have with God, the peace that we experience in this life, the peace that Christ is going to give to us, it does not deny the fact that there is difficulty in this life, or that we're going to experience pain or wrong, or that there's going to be disruption. Because those are facts of life. That just happens to us. What it means is our reality, our purpose, and our future is defined entirely by our connection to God and aligning to his order. And when we do that, we have assurance. We are in his hands, and he is the one that holds and makes our future sure. And that is a completely different kind of peace than we experience in this life. So if we can go to the next slide. So I want to unpack John 14 a little bit and make some connections here, especially as we go back. And here in just a minute, we're going to go back to the example of the lady that I was speaking about in the Old Testament, but we're going to make some connections here with the New. So we go back to John 14, verse 27. We've read it. I'm not going to read it again. But as we unpack something that, as we unpack what Christ said, one of the things we can see from this, the peace that he gives, the peace that he promises, it is not about some type of situational calmness or the circumstances that we find ourselves in. What he's talking about is rooted in our relationship with the Father. And it's interesting that this verse comes in the context of where Christ is talking about having a relationship, having oneness with the Father. You know, we see that in John 14, verse 1, where he says, let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe in me also. In other words, there is a connection there. There is a relationship. In verse 10, do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I speak to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me, he does these works. This is about a relationship. The peace that he is talking about emanates from that connection. We see that in verses 20 and 21 as well. The other interesting things here, so when you spend some time and you look at the connections, this peace that he's talking about, when he says my peace, so the peace that he gives to us comes from the Hebrew, Irene. And again, this is not just talking about an emotional calm. So what's really interesting about this word, when we look at the Septuagint, so the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures. Irene is the word that is used to translate shalom. So one of the things, whenever you're looking into this, one of the things you find, a lot of the scholars will say, what the writers in the New Testament are doing, they're imbuing this idea of peace that we're talking about here with the idea of shalom. So it's more than just about emotional calm. It is It is about wholeness, and it is about ordered completeness. It is about covenant well-being. It is about that relationship that we have with God. The other thing that's really interesting here, Christ is absolutely emphatic. The peace that he is going to give is in a different category than what we experience in the world. It's not comparable. So what we find in the world is not just a weaker version of the peace that he gives us. It's something completely different. I think it's interesting to think about that when we reflect on something that John said in John chapter 1. John told us in John chapter 1 that the light shined into the darkness and the darkness couldn't understand it. It is completely different from anything in the world. And the peace that we're talking about today is not something, and in full transparency, I struggled with some of the wording and some of the and how to present this, because we get to some of these topics and some of these things have to be experienced. It is an intimate, because when we talk about peace, and we're going to get into this, there are times when we're looking for peace in our life, and those times are raw. They're pain, and we struggle, and we look for peace, and that's when God comes, and that's when we have that peace, and that's when it is unique. But that words just fail that sometime. You know, try to communicate it, but quite frankly, I think it's one of those things that you just got to feel. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the stability that we have in our life, the wholeness, the completeness. When we are picked up and put in our Father's presence, and we loyally align to him, yeah, we're not perfect, but we are loyal, and we align to his order and the way that he's designed to his life, this life to be lived, and we align to his purpose and his will. There's a peace that comes from that, because we're in his hands. And he tells us, I'm never going to leave you. I'm never going to forsake you. Doesn't matter what happens, I've got you. That is a really powerful statement. You know, Paul says something very similar. We can go to the next slide. In Philippians chapter 4, if we can just... Let's go ahead and build the slide. Can we go ahead and hit, let's go through a couple more. Let's keep going. Sorry about this. There we go. I thought I turned off all the build. I was thinking I was actually going to have one of those clickers and I could build it, but I didn't get here soon enough to test and needed to test it last week anyway. Not what you necessarily care about. My foible. Make this a little bit lighter. So when we think about Philippians, what Paul's communicating, because Paul's communicating a very similar idea about peace. Verse 5, Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5. Let your gentleness be made known to all people. Really interesting statement. That comes as a connection to God. This is relationship based. The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ. You know, we look at verses 1 and verses 5 here. Verses 5 is fairly evident. It is about a relationship. This peace comes as a result of having that connection and relationship. What's really interesting, though, is a Greek that's used here for be anxious. I don't know if you've ever felt this way, but have you felt that you're in a situation where you feel like you're being pulled apart? Where the stresses, the pressures, you feel like you're being pulled, you feel like you're being divided, you feel like you're being fragmented. What he's saying here, you don't have to feel that way. We don't have to have that anxiousness. Because as we have that connection, and we are loyal, and we faithfully follow and cleave to our Father, anxiety gives way because our life is entrusted to Him. Again, the peace of God, when Paul mentions that, a completely different category, has nothing to do with worldly peace. The other interesting term here is will guard. You know, that's a military term. In effect, what Paul's saying here, no, the troops are going to be deployed to protect you. That peace protects you. Like troops being deployed to protect, you're being protected. But here's the question now. We raise this up. What does it look like? When this peace is experienced, what does it really look like? So what I'd like to do now, I'd like to take us, you can go to the next slide. I'm going to go to 2 Kings 4. But before we jump into 2 Kings 4, I want to look at the life of somebody that is referred to, fascinating, the Shunammite woman. So I want you to think about this. Think about what we don't, as we get into this, to the discussion, think about what we don't know about her. We don't even know her name. She's referred to as a Shunammite woman, which tells us something. It's about what's going on, and it's about God's interaction in her life. But before we get there, I want to set this up a little bit, and I want to touch base on another term. So we talked about shalom, which is peace, refers to order. I want to talk about another term, the Hebrew term that's often translated evil. There is a term in Hebrew that's translated evil, and it's ra. What's interesting about ra is it also, where it is used in Scripture, will talk about disorder. So what ra refers broadly to that which is bad or harmful. It can be translated as something that is being evil. It can be translated as dysfunctional or destructive. It can refer to moral evil, but it is not. It doesn't necessarily talk about moral evil. But when we think about ra, and this is what I want us to kind of come to, it generally first refers to anything that deviates, damages, or undermines God's intended order. So think about this. We have shalom, which represents peace and God's order, and we have ra, which represents evil and disorder, the antithesis of God's order. When we break upon 2 Kings 4, we find an environment that is in disarray, that is in disorder. We find a world that has gone from the order that God intended to one that is confusing. What do we have? We have a nation that's divided politically and religiously. So in Judah, you have a covenant-centered worship. Mostly, when there's a good king, sometimes, but the people clearly are going astray. But what do we have in the north, in Israel? You have a self-defined political structure, and you have a people that are remaking religion in their own image to suit their own purpose. You have chaos. You have disorder. You do not have God's order in this whole situation. The leadership is unstable. Kings rise and fall. When there's a bad king, some people may want them to fall, like Ahab, because of the atrocities that he prosecuted. But there's confusion. What we find with the prophets that God sends, they're marginalized, they're threatened, they're killed. People don't want to hear what they have to say. And you have Baal worship. I mean, what happened just before 2 Kings 4 with Elijah when he confronted the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel? Keep that in mind. Keep Mount Carmel in the back of your mind. There's Baal worship. And so when you think about Baal worship, what is it? It is people trying to engage the gods to force them to do their will. So you move from a faithful covenant worship into a worship that where you're trying to get the gods to do what you want. It's chaos. And that's the world that we go into. And then we go to Shunem. So what about Shunem? The Shunammite woman lived in Shunem. Where was Shunem? Right in the middle of all that. Located in the Jezreel Valley. And what's really interesting, it was the primary corridor. So if you're going to go to war and you were going to go north or south, you went through here. If you were going to trade, you went through this area. Shunem was a pass-through town. People came and went. It was exposed to all kinds of ideas, all kinds of thoughts. It was not remote. It was in the middle of chaos. It's also a place where royal powers intersected, where false worship, prophets. So as we think about the Shunammite woman, it's important to put this context around. And this is what I want you to keep in the back of your mind. I want you to think about shalom, peace aligned to God's order and what that produces, and raw chaos. This lady found herself in chaos. We're going to find she has shalom. Didn't matter what was going on out here. So we can go to the next slide. 2 Kings chapter 4, beginning in verse 8. So before we go in, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go through just to refresh our mind. Let me just kind of give a brief overview of the story, and then we're going to go in through 2nd through and kind of dissect it a little bit. So Elisha was going between the northern and southern kingdoms. He was delivering prophecies. He was engaging. And so he was going through Shunem frequently. The Shunammite woman and her husband saw him. She went to her husband and said, "Hey, this is a man of God, this holy man. Let's invite him in. Let's feed him. Let's build a room for him so he has a place when he comes through to stay." She had care, she had concern, she did that, the husband agreed. Elisha went back to her after that and he said, "Look, you've been so caring for us, what can we do for you?" And she said, "I don't need anything." And then, I think clearly God orchestrated this, Elisha said, "Well, you're gonna have a son, you're gonna have a child." She didn't have any children. So she had a child. One day the child went out with the father after he'd grown up a little bit. He was working in the fields. And when he was in the fields, he started telling his father, "Father, my head hurts. My head hurts." The father sends him home with a servant. She holds her son when he gets back. His head hurts. And he actually dies sitting in her lap. She put him on her bed, immediately went to Elisha. Elisha sent Gehazi with a staff to resurrect him. Didn't work. Elijah went. Elijah resurrected him, resurrected her son. And she was incredibly grateful. That's the story. But I think that doesn't get to the whole story and the intensity and the motion that we find here. So let's go through some of these passages and pick them apart a little bit so we can understand the intensity and we can understand Shalom and how it blossomed in her life and what it meant to her. Beginning in verse 8. It happened one day that Elisha passed through Shunem, where there's a wealthy woman, and many people look at this and say, it wasn't just about wealth, physical, financial wealth. There was a wholeness and there was a completeness, which I think is probably accurate. And she urged him to eat bread. So it happened each time he passed through, he would stop there and eat. And she said to her husband, please now, I know that he is a holy man of God and is passing our way regularly. Let us make a small enclosed room upstairs and put a bed, a table, a chair, and a lampstand there for him so that when he comes, he can turn and stay there. There's a few things here to zero in on to kind of help build out the situation. The first was that this was something that was recurring, right? This is a repeated action. Elisha was going through the town back and forth, and she recognized him. She recognized that there was more than just him. She recognized he was a prophet. She recognized that he represented God, that there was something more than just somebody passing through. He was invited in, and she fed him. And what's interesting, as we think about, if we put it in context, when you come in and you break bread and you have meal, especially consistent, this is not just about, hey, here's a snack. It's about fellowship. It's about commitment. It's about community. And it is about engaging. It's about relationship. It's about relational loyalty. So it's beginning to paint a story about this woman and who and what she is and what she was. The other thing that's really interesting, when she told her husband, I know, she used the term yada. Yada doesn't mean it's not just some casual observation. What's really interesting about this woman and about her connection to God, she perceived what many in Israel did not. She understood who Elisha was. She understood what he stood for, and she understood what he was doing. She was aware. So when we take a step back in these few opening verses, one of the things that we see very clearly, her house was aligned and connected to God. In the middle of chaos, of disorder, of hundreds of thousands living a way of life that was contrary, in the middle where people trafficked, where she saw, where you could probably see anything, she was aligned to God. That's what she was focused on. We can go to the next slide. Continuing in verse 11. And it happened one day that he came there. He turned into the upper room and lay down there. And then he said to Gehazi, his servant, call the Shunammite woman. And when he called her, she stood there before him. And he said to him, say now to her, look, you've been concerned with us, with all this care. And it's really interesting. This term concerned, it doesn't mean just like, oh yeah, let me get you something. It has this idea of trembling. And what that means is that it was intentional, it was focused, it was there was an intensity about her concern and care. You've been concerned with us with all this care. What can I do for you? Do you want me to speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army? And she answered, I dwell among my people. Fascinating response. So again, let's contextualize this. You're in chaos. You have wars. You have instability. In the 9th century, when she lived, one of the things you would have done to look for protection and security, you would have looked to align yourself with kings and the commanders. That's where you look. That's where I'm going to get my stability. That's where I'm going to get my safety. That's where I'm going to get my peace. And we can look at this and it's like, yeah, maybe that would have been a good idea. But her statement is not about just naively ignoring everything that is going on around her. That's not her point. It was a declaration. It was a statement about where her safety comes from. It was about where her wholeness comes from. It wasn't about military power. That's not what she was looking for. And that idea is reinforced by her reply when this question was asked of her. I live among my people. It's a really interesting thought process that's going on here. When we think about wholeness, when we think about sufficiency, she had shalom. She had wholeness. She had sufficiency. One of the things to think about here, when we look at Leviticus chapter 3, we have the peace offering. The peace offering comes from the same root that shalom does. Term is shalem. What the peace offering is, it's an offering where an individual goes before God, no sin involved, and they say, my life is well, my life is whole. I want to connect with you, and you share in the offering. It is a time where you go in and you share a meal, you share connection, you share fellowship. And the statement is my life is whole, my life is well because of you, God. And it's a recognition of his role in your life. And she is saying, I don't need kings. I don't need commanders. I'm with my people. My life is whole. I have shalom. Shalom. I dwell among my people. We can go to the next slide. So there's an intervening period. She has a child now. She's blessed with a child. We go through the process to where child goes out, grows up a little bit, goes out with the father. His head hurts. He comes back and he dies as he's sitting on her lap. Now, take a minute. I cannot imagine holding my child as they died. And you are absolutely helpless to help them. All you can do is sit there and hold them and listen to their whimpers and their cry as they die. Talk about feeling torn apart. Talk about the intensity and the emotion and the power of that moment. When we think about this connection with God and the peace that we have, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be sorrow and difficulty and struggle. And she lived that in a way that was difficult. She took him up, put him on the bed in Elisha's room. Then in verse 22, she called to her husband and said, Please send one of the servants, one of the female donkeys for me, so that I can go quickly up to the man of God and return. And he said, why are you going to him today? It is neither the new moon or the Sabbath. And she said one word. She said, peace. Fascinating. But what's really interesting, just pull apart her reaction. What does she not do here? She didn't appeal to authority. She didn't go look for doctors. She didn't look for anybody to come in and help. She's not looking for somebody else to start to make this right. She immediately aims herself towards God's intervention, towards God's presence. When her husband questions her, just one word response. And what's interesting, when we think about how she's using it here, she's not saying that God is going to raise my child. She's not stipulating an outcome. I'm not trying, you know, in Baal worship at this time, you engaged Baal to try to force an outcome. That's not what she's doing. She's focusing on the loyalty and the covenant and the relationship, and she is going there for her stability. She was going there for her connection. It was an affirmation. It was a statement about her relationship with God. And that regardless of anything else that's happening out here, my relationship is intact and my life is whole because of him. She entrusted herself to God, to his providence, to his will, to his purpose, even in the midst of this horrendous loss. Go to the next slide. So she saddled the donkey. She said to her servant, drive along and go. You must not hold me back from riding unless I tell you. In other words, ride like the wind, baby. We're going to go as fast as we can. So she went and came to the man of God on Mount Carmel. Fascinating. Where was God working? Where had God worked with Elijah? And it happened that when the man of God saw her at a distance, he said to Gehazi, his servant, there is this Shunammite. It's really interesting. Now, please run and meet her and ask her, is it peace? Is it shalom with you? Is it shalom with your husband? And is it peace for the boy? Representative of her whole life. And her response? I mean, she had just lost her son. I am whole. I am connected. My relationship with you is intact. The order in my life is secure. The order and the connection that I have with you is not at risk. The world in her, the world around her was chaotic. She was experiencing pain and difficulty. Her connection was sure. Her peace, her order in her life was sure. That peace didn't slow her down. She moved quickly. She knew where to go. All about faith. You can go to the next slide. So she came to the man of God at the mountain, and she caught hold of his feet. Then Gehazi came near to push her away, but the man of God said, let her alone, for her soul is bitter. And Yahweh has hidden it from me and has not told me. And then she said, did I ask for a son from my Lord? Did I not say that you must not mislead me? I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask for this pain. We know the rest of the story. She went to God. She went to God's representative. There was no rebellion. There was no accusation. It's a plea for help. And in an environment and a world marked by rebellion, chaos, disorder, she chose God. She chose shalom. I want to look at one more example. But I want to introduce another term because I think this term is really important. Because it's one of the reasons that we have peace. And that's the term chesed. If we can go to the next slide. Before we get to the next example, because I think more examples always help. What is chesed? I think chesed is something that's really important, and we don't see it coming out here. We don't see this terminology, but it is a powerful example. It is powerfully relevant, and it is visible. We just don't see the term. Now, chesed is a term in Hebrew. It's generally translated mercy, covenant loyalty, love, steadfast, faithful kindness. There's a lot of terms that we see chesed translated. But when we think about chesed, chesed is covenant-anchored, action-expressed, loyalty-driven love. It is not just about God saying, I'm going to let this one go because I love you. And it is especially true when his people face difficulties and problems. He intervenes in our life when we need it most. And there is a connection between shalom and grace. I'm sorry, chesed and grace. Because when we see chesed exercised, what do we see? There are four characteristics, four conditions. So when we look through the Bible, and we go through and we look up chesed, when we see God, especially with God, when we see chesed exercised, we see these four characteristics, and we see them consistently. The first characteristic, it's crisis driven. So we always see this in a situation where there is a severe need, where the consequences of God not acting is death, or there's some type of severe consequence. We see him extending chesed freely. Chesed is never offered in a situation where you can demand it. We can't demand God, anything of God, but where it can't be demanded or required, and it's not transactional. It's offered in a situation where it's like, okay, God, you do this for me, I'll do that for you. No. You can do nothing. And if he doesn't act, the consequences are horrendous. The fourth characteristic, when it's offered, it's in a situation only he can address. And if he doesn't address, there's no option. But what's really interesting about chesed, it's not something that God does. It's a part of who he is and what he is. When he put Moses behind the rock in Exodus 34, and he allowed Moses to see his backside, when he walked by, he explained who he was. And one of the things that he said about himself is, I am the God that exercises chesed. What's interesting about God is that he desires to exercise chesed in your life and in my life. He wants to rescue us. He wants to be the one that comes in and protects and sustains our life through troubles, through difficulty. He is glorified by that. It is his desire. So when we think about shalom, he wants to be that one that gives peace. Let me go to the next slide. I'm going to go to Mark 14. And I want to tie together now shalom and chesed. And I want to look at it in the life of Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane. So in Mark 14, beginning in verse 32, we read, "Then they came to a place named Gethsemane." So his life, the time is ticking away now. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." And he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. These words, troubled and deeply distressed, there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of emotion. There are different ways to translate that. Think of profound astonishment or amazement, distress to the point of exhaustion. It just, he knew what was coming, and it was heavy. There are times in our life when the situation is not all peaceful outside. It's just not. Then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch." And he went a little further, and he fell on the ground, and he prayed that if it be possible, that the hour might pass from him. And he said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will." You know, when we're brought into a relationship with our Father, our will gets reordered. And not about what we want anymore. Our life becomes ordered according to our Father's will and his purpose. And that maintains the relationship. That maintains a connectivity. And as we align ourselves with him, with his way of life, with his purpose and his will, peace emerges. And it doesn't mean that we have control over the outcomes in our life. And that's the really hard part. But it does mean that our life is held secure in his hands. Because he will save us, even if it's not in this life. And that's the hard part. But because we are faithful and we have loyalty, because we live by faith, we trust him, and we trust the fact that what he does is for our best interest. And you know, it doesn't matter what's going on out there. Because regardless of what happens out there, that's never going to change. And that's where peace comes from. That's where stability comes from. We can go to the next slide. So what about us? You know, I thought about this, trying to think, what are the couple of points that I could put here? This has to be experienced. This happens when we go to a quiet place and we get on our knees and we connect with our Father. It's when we stay aligned to him and we live our life. And we think about this kind of peace. This is not some type of intellectual peace that I can reason through. It surpasses our understanding, but we definitely can feel it. And we feel it when we're still and we're quiet. So I would encourage us, take some time Be still. Be quiet. On your knees. And experience it. Engage with God. Think about it then.